when I would come home, Beth would always make sure that she waited up for me so we could talk a little bit. I remember that being awesome because it makes you remember why you're doing this.
This is Jen Slumack. You're listening to the podcast, Just Say It, a show that aims to highlight the commonplaces among us. As we amplify a variety of voices, conversations, and questions, we hope to make social constructs obsolete and move together toward Dr. King's beloved community. Thank you for tuning in.
So, hi.
Hey.
I am so happy that you agreed to talk with me. So my goal is to have conversations with people that I find compelling, and you are one of those people, John. Always have been. So I usually just started off asking you to tell me about who you are.
Well, I am John. brother to you. Yeah.
Can you tell me briefly who you were before you were a parent?
I guess I was a typical teenager. I guess like many, you know, your life is your life. So that's typical.
Just figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
How old were you when you had your first child?
Was 18 when she was born. Moved out the first time when I was 17. So I was kind of a little bit after that, you know, 18. I think I'm legal now, an adult. So let's go full in and, you know, have a kid and do this adulting thing.
Was that the mindset? Is that what you thought? You're sitting there one day in your own place and you said, you know, I got my toe in the water of this adulting thing.
Exactly. I can vote right now. I can buy cigarettes. You know, the other thing, what else can I do? I can have children. So that's what I did. I started out by, you know, having a child and, you know, from there went from being 18 and, you know, doing everything that you wanted to do. And, you know, figuring out yourself to, I mean, when you look at somebody and you say, this child, this being, they will not survive unless I help them. Then, you know, you kind of shift everything and you say, okay, well, we're going to do this together. So that's what you do. And then you make one choice. It doesn't work out. For me, you know, the beginning was a lot of reevaluating. And until I met Beth, one of my big things was, okay, now that I've had a child and I got custody of her. Now it's me and her. And then from there, you know, I wanted more. I wanted somebody else. It wasn't that I wasn't meeting people. I was meeting people, but nobody had the same goals as I did to raise their kids and kind of leave everything else behind and raising the kids, giving them things that we never had and going to church. Even though it wasn't easy, you had to give up essentially who you were. The thing I liked about when we met too was neither one of us said, okay, I met you, here's my kids. We both figured out, we worked out together first. As much as we cared for each other in the beginning, we knew that if the kids met and that didn't work out, that it didn't really matter what we felt. So from there, it was just, you know, that was the start of my new life as a parent and a husband, just learning things that I didn't really see happen. And I had to kind of figure them out myself.
You know, we all go through this time in adolescence and in young adulthood, reevaluating and adjusting. When we have the sort of capacity or the intuitiveness or something to reevaluate and then shift what we're doing, I've seen you do a lot of that. We all have to do that to some degree. I remember when you met Beth.
Me too.
And that you were going to build a family. And I was very excited for you and for your daughter. Tell us, if you would, what are some of the other things that you decided were important to you as a couple, as a team?
Well, working together towards the betterment of us and the children, we kind of put them first. We have four kids, and she had two when she came in. I have one, and then we had one together. We always knew that we wanted to have a larger family, and we wanted to do things as a family. I never wanted to be like the parent that pushed myself on my kids. I never wanted to be that parent that said, okay, well, this is what I like to do, so you better learn it or you're not hanging out with me. My two sons were big into sports, football and baseball, traveling team. One thing I noticed, a lot of the parents, whether or not the kids were into the sports, their parents were. So you could have one child that did not want to be there, but he would do everything he could because dad would pay attention to them. And I never wanted to be that parent. So we both felt it was important to figure out what our kids liked and be the parent that would root them on rather than the parent that would make them do things. That's not to say that we wouldn't steer them in a right direction if they were making a bad choice, because, you know, there's a lot of steering, but there's also hand-holding. Starting off early or young and getting together, we both worked when we first met, and the money that we brought in was good money if it was two single people. But when you have four kids involved, you can either stay at home, never go out, or the boys, for instance, they play baseball. Okay, you can play baseball for the park district, and it's minimum cost. But what do you do if your kids play at a different level than that? Well, you can either say, well, this is what you have, so just be the best on the team. Or you can say, okay, we got to make some changes. We got to reevaluate again. But this time, we're going to reevaluate as a couple. You know, we're going to see what things we can do differently. So at that point, what we decided was we made a change where we lived. You know, we moved to Woodstock, and that was a big change. And then Beth, that was working, decided to stay home. If she continued to work, her money would come in, and then we would have to pay for all our kids to go to after school care. But with her staying home, we were one of the few families around that had somebody home during the summers. So other parents in the neighborhood that went to work could bring their kids, and Beth would take care of them, watch them. We were able to kind of scale back what we did so that we had funds to do other things. Like traveling ball, for instance, it was very important to us that they would go and do traveling ball. We were on teams that you could pay outright for these traveling teams, or you could do fundraising. We were always the first ones. Well, I can't even say we. I hated fundraising. Beth would always be the one that would do fundraising. I mean, we did everything from selling candy bars to wreaths to
popcorn.
Yeah, popcorn. I remember one year they had, during the baseball games, we ran like the concession stand, and Beth made her chili, and it sold out so quick, they said, can you make another pot? So we left the game, and she went back. We went to the store, and she made like four more pots of chili, and it sold out. And these are just all things that helped the team, helped us, you know, and everything. And one of the big things for me, and looking back, is I remember sometimes thinking, this is never going to happen, you know. But having Beth, she would always say, we'll figure it out, you know, we'll do it. And I've always said that, you know, we've done a lot more with, you know, her attitude involved in it than we would have done with mine, because I get nervous when things don't go right and I'll just shut down and say, we're not doing it, you know, but we would push forward.
Well, and I think it's beautiful when a partnership can do that. Sort of a team develops, right? Literally find out what each other's strengths are and allow them to be sort of, you know, the functioning parts of the partnership. And I've observed from a distance some impressive things about the way that you and Beth have raised the kids. So it's kind of neat for me to learn that it's sort of been her spirit of, you know, we'll figure it out. In my marriage, it was my partner. You know, I remember when we were first dating, I had nothing in my apartment. I had no furnishings, and a friend had given me a chair, right? So I had something to sit on. And this was after my separation from my son's mom. And this chair was from a smoker's home, and it just reeked. The fabric on it just reeked. And so I had it out on the balcony to air out. Right? And somebody I was dating, now my wife, came over and was on the balcony. I was just kind of, you know, looking at it, and I said, what's the fancy chair doing on the balcony? You got nothing in the house to sit on, right? And I said, it reeks, man. I've got to reupholster it, but I don't know where to begin. So I'm just airing it out. I don't know what else to do. And she goes, well, how hard can it be? And I remember just, that was just such a, what? Just having somebody on the team who's willing to, because like you, I will become overwhelmed and just shut down. And just to have somebody else there who doesn't agree with me.
Right. She's got the strengths of certain things. And that's something her and I do well together, where we're on the same page, where we'll take something and let's see, like our bedroom, we did a dresser and matching side tables. And, you know, it's like, see, that's the fun stuff that doesn't scare me.
Tell me about the fun stuff. Number one, being a young couple of parents and having these dreams for your children, these ways that you want to raise your kids and the things that you wanted to do as a family, and having just a solo income once you decided that she would be at home. Things don't always run flush, man. How do you accomplish the things that you did, and how do you find the hobbies that you did? Tell us about those things.
Well, one thing, you know, every so often when she would watch other kids, you know, that was helpful as well. In the beginning, I worked two jobs at a valve shop where I was a foreman of a shop repairing valves for like the pipeline industry.
So you're a high school graduate and then you went into the trades, is that right?
Yes, yes. And at the time we lived in Woodstock and this job was about an hour drive if you have no traffic. And I started there at 7 o'clock in the morning, but to beat traffic and everything, I think I would leave the house at like 5. So I'd go to my first job, I'd work there. And then after my job was done, I think it was like 3:30 or something like that, I would change in the bathroom and I would go to Delta Sonic, the car wash. And then I would dry cars all night and that was for tips. And after that, then I would drive home. I think they closed at like 9 and then you had to close everything up. So it was like 10 o'clock and then I would head home. And Savannah was, she was just a baby. When I would come home, Beth would always make sure that she waited up for me so we could talk a little bit at night. Sometimes it was, you know, she was on the couch waiting for me and, you know, then she woke up. But I remember that being awesome because it makes you remember why you're doing this, because you're driving home and it's like, you know, this sucks. I mean, just because you're tired and you look at the clock and you're like, okay, I'm not even home yet. And 5 hours from now, I'm going to be headed back the way I came. But you see why you're doing these things. And I remember coming home and I always had to wake Savannah up if she was asleep because I had to see her, my new baby, you know, and it kind of drove Beth nuts because she finally got her to bed. And then I'm like, all right, I got to go to bed. I got to work in 4 hours, you know. I remember counting tips. I would get home and you worked at the car wash. And at that time, empty my pockets and there's all these tips. And it was like, awesome, you know, tomorrow we can get food or gas or whatever we needed. And then also on the weekends, they had a cleaning company that did all the cleaning of the building and the bathrooms at my first job at the valve shop. So I did that every week, like Saturday mornings. I think I would go in and clean the building and the bathrooms and everything. They had a cleaning company do it. And I asked them if I could do it and they would just pay me what they paid the cleaning company. So they gave me like a trial time and worked out. So I did that as well. So in the beginning, that's how we did it.
How long did you do that for, that schedule?
Maybe a year and a half, something like that. And then I started looking for another job, no wear and tear in the car, things like that. I need to find something closer to home. And I applied a bunch of places. And the problem I was running into was, like I said, we were making decent money, is that everywhere I applied for mechanical sense or anything in that realm wouldn't pay me enough and they wouldn't hire me. They said, we know that you'll leave at the first chance of something better. So that's when I went to the appliance company and I applied there. One of the weirdest interviews I ever had, because I just kind of felt like I could work here and I could work with this guy. And I almost didn't care at that point. You know, he would ask me a question and I answered it honestly and I didn't care if I was getting the job or not, you know. And I just remember the interview, you know, he's like, I had long sleeves on and I took my earrings out and I went to this interview and I'm sitting there across from my would-be boss. And he's like, at the end of the interview, he's like, well, you look good. You look nice, clean cut. You know, I didn't have a beard or anything. I had a goatee. He's like, that's good. You don't have any tattoos or a bunch of crap hanging from your ears or anything. And I was just like, I said, well, actually, you know, I do. And I rolled up my sleeves and showed him. He's like, well, let me ask you a question. He said, do you regret it? Do you regret getting tattoos? And I said, no. And actually, I plan to get more in the future. And he kind of looked at me and he's like, well, it's kind of a ballsy answer during a interview, don't you think? And I said, well, I'm not going to start a job by lying to my boss. You know, I said, I'm going to be truthful. And years later, he told me, because they did hire me, he told me that he just couldn't believe that I answered him like that. And I said, well, you know, I was going to be honest. I think sometimes that helped me get the job. So that's how I got into appliance repair. I took a huge pay cut. I mean, huge. But again, we had to make things work out. We did. And it was rough for a little bit. You know, we had ramen and then we had ramen again. Then it worked out. Kind of a lead into your next thing. One of the things with when I got that job was it was all commission based. So it was no vacation pay or anything like that. So we took vacations every year. We drove everywhere we could. And a lot of our vacations, they would follow kind of our sporting events schedules. So we went to a baseball tournament in New York and it's going to be our vacation or summer vacation. Okay. But we have two daughters too. We also have Beth and me. We have to make this a family vacation. This can't just be baseball and then you guys come watch the game. It has to be something more. So she would do things like we went to New York and we went with another family and we rented a house on all this acreage that had a pond and everything like that. And while the baseball games were going on, we had somewhere to come back to, and we had somewhere where everybody and the girls and everything could fish. You know, they could basically have country life. She set up one day in New York City. So we got to go to New York City and stay in a hotel and just see the sights, all the little add-ons. One thing you got to know about vacation and vacation with us is that it's not relax. You can relax when you get home and remember what you did. It's you're here for this amount of time. You sleep before we go on vacation or in the car, because we have so many things planned, because we're going to see everything that we want to see, and we're going to do it quickly.
2 days.
Yeah, well, if you have 2 days, well, that's the thing with driving, too. It's okay. I'm not getting paid vacation, so we got no income coming in right now. We have to be able to pay for the vacation ahead of time. We did a lot of sandwiches, cooler dinners, and things like that. You know, we're in this nice hotel. Let's go back to the room and have PB&Js, you know? But we always made it work, and those are the best memories that everyone has. I mean, we still, to this day, when we hop in the car, you know, it's we play music and we talk, and, you know, I mean, that's just a fun family time.
Where did that come from? Where did that come from that you two were able to create that? That's one of the things that I've always admired about you and your wife, is just the creative ways that you have generated community in your family. You know, and even beyond your kids. I mean, I've seen you welcome people into the family for the benefit of your kids, you know, for the benefit of having the community, so to speak. Where did that come from? Was that one of those early decisions that you made as a couple?
I think that's one of the decisions that we almost didn't need to make. We didn't. It just kind of, Beth, when she was a single parent, she used to take the kids to this daycare that was kind of far from her house, and she would wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, get the kids ready, get them to their daycare, then she would go off to work. And she kind of did the same things that I did during that trip. She would talk to the boys, you know, and I kind of did that with Alyssa when she was young, but also music would play an important role in all that. She would play country music and sing the songs, and everyone would learn the lyrics, and I would do the same thing. When we got together, one of the big things was that we were both huge music lovers. So the music continued in the family. We would get in the car and we would play songs that we loved. And that's always kind of been something in our family. We go on a long trip, we play a song, this person plays a song, this person plays a song. Now the tastes have changed because the kids have grown up. You know, when they were younger, they were only allowed to listen to things that we said were appropriate. But then little by little, you know, they hear other types of music and they want to throw that into the music time. And it's just fun because you learn a lot of music, but it keeps everyone together. I don't know. It's always been a big thing. I remember music. I remember when we used to have on my Xbox, we had like a karaoke machine, and we would have like karaoke parties, and all the kids would sing a song. They would, well, you and I used to do shows. Remember that little camera, the black and white camera that had the cassette tapes in it, the Fisher Price one?
Yeah, it was Fisher Price. Yeah.
And we would do, like, you know, music videos and stuff like that.
God, I wish I could find those. I wish those existed somewhere that we could watch now.
I know, me too. That'd be crazy. But that's kind of what we did. We did things like that, but we did them as a family. It's just continued. It's continued now where they call it Record Saturday, because on Saturday mornings, I used to always wake everybody up in the morning by throwing an old record on or something different. A lot of times I would pick something that was loud and obnoxious, but or beautiful, just to start in the morning. The cool thing was, we're all spending time together. Sometimes we're doing different things. A lot of times Beth would be cooking breakfast. You know, she'd put some music on. I'd put some music on. One of the kids would pick a song or a video. And it's weird because some days it's like all of a sudden we started in the morning and it's 2 o'clock and we haven't done anything but watch videos and play music. You know, those were the fun, kind of the fun family times that continued in the car and the road trips and everything like that. It just kind of clicked.
Yeah, what a gift. Some of my favorite stories that you shared with me are creative ways that you have not had much, but made the important things count. You know, generating the family time, generating the relationships, generating and nurturing the relationships. So I think about when you and your daughter would take a dollar and see how long you could make that last in the course of a day. How did that come up?
Well, you can sit at home and sit and say, you know, I have I don't have this, I can't do this, I don't have this, so I can't do that. Or you can just see what happens sometimes. One time Savannah and I, we were at home and I think I had a dollar bill and some change in my pocket, like one quarter, one nickel, a dime, and you know, a couple pennies or something. Didn't want to stay at home, so we're like, all right, let's see what we can do with what we have. So we went to the square, and the square's it's real pretty. You know, I think we sat at the bench and everything and talked for a little bit. So we started off, I believe there's a museum there, and it has art and everything in there. And it's kind of like from the town. It's in the old courthouse, and it's free. So we went in there. It's kind of fun because we'll bounce things off each other. We get each other's jokes, you know, and things like that. So
yeah, I always felt like she became like you and I had that relationship. I watch you and Savannah and it reminds me of you and me growing up.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you know, you get the humor and
just really silly and really playful.
Right. And so that was fun. Once that was done, we went out and started walking the square more. And the hobby shop, there's like a big toy store / hobby shop. We decided, okay, let's go in there and see what this is all about. We went in there, and at the time, they had this huge storefront window, and they had this whole scene set up with the trains and, you know, everything going around. So we went in, and on the inside, the glass was only kind of halfway, so we were able to watch, and we watched the trains go around and, you know, all the different scenery and, you know, how cool it was, and walk through the store. And there was a bookstore, too, and it's all used books. And there was like this, I don't know if it was like a penny or a nickel section or something like that. Savannah like found a whole bunch of books. I don't remember how it worked out. I remember the lady behind the counter was talking to us and kind of surprised that we were both in there and that we found these books so awesome and everything. We ended up spending like 30 cents or something and getting these books. I mean, that's my recollection of it, but I remember it was dirt cheap. And I remember the lady behind the counter giving us a heck of a deal, you know, just because it was kind of cool. So I remember when it was all over, I still had my crisp dollar bill in my pocket.
Awesome.
And I was like, did you see all the stuff that we did today and how fun it was? And so on the way home, I decided I was going to splurge. I had a buck left because I saw Burger King had cones for 50 cents a piece. We had our ice cream cones and we still talk about that day. And we still do things like that. I mean, we'll just go. We'll go to a thrift store. We like thrift stores and antique shops because it's like a museum where you can touch things. Kind of cool.
What do you think in hindsight the value of these experiences have been for your child?
I think it's good because she knows you just sometimes got to think outside the box, you know, and everything's not about money. A lot of times, you know, it's about the time together and relationships and who you're doing it with, not so much always what you're doing. We did them together. And that's what's difficult now sometimes is because, you know, now there's only two home and, you know, two are gone. You still want to have that. And it's harder to get everyone together, but that's where we're at now. So
what is something that you've learned from your children or their lives have taught you that you didn't expect to learn?
I guess one of the big things is kind of trusting that we did our job. That's hard sometimes. You still want to parent their lives rather than trusting that what you taught them, you know, that they're going to do the right thing. And that's what I'm learning. They're still teaching it. You know, they're going to be okay.
The letting go.
Yeah. And also seeing how, you know, how good they are at doing their own thing. They all are so different in different personalities, but what they do very well. And it's very impressive to me. You know, it's like, wow, it's pretty awesome. You know, I got to find something like that. You know, it's like,
well, see, from the outside, I see that you have something like that. I see it in your music. I see it in your fixing things. You've always been one of my favorite people on this planet, right? I've been very lucky to grow up between two guys, you, my younger brother, and then my older brother, who grew up in the same world that I grew up in. And to watch you both become these, like, in my eyes, very impressive men, just really wonderful husbands and fathers. And so much of what I've seen happen in your life with your family has been sourced in your creativity. You have made something out of nothing or made something shine out of something dull in so many different situations in your life. And I don't know if you realize that that's a talent of yours, but I think that you and your wife share that. And it's one of the things that I just love because For me, creativity is part of my faith, part of my spiritual walk. You know, we're sort of made in the image of, therefore we're co-creators and we have imaginations. How do we apply our imaginations? Do we apply them to what we don't have? Or do we apply them to what we can do with what we do have? It's going to determine the quality of our lives. And it can be very difficult to do. It's very easy to go down the rabbit hole of what I have not. And we all do that. It's human. I'm sure that you've done it. I know that I've done it. And also, the majority of what I've witnessed from a distance as your sister is this man who finds great joy in music and in taking old things and making them new. And it's a beautiful thing to me. It's probably greatly responsible for your success in being a family man and raising your kids and,
oh, yeah, for sure.
And the marriage. And so that's what I see. Do you remember your first fix-it project? You were like, ah.
I remember a couple, actually. I'll ramble a couple off real quick. I remember living in West Chicago. We had the TV in the living room, and it wasn't like now where everyone had a TV in their bedroom or anything. And I remember I wanted to play Atari, and Mom had her soap operas or something, but I was not getting the TV today. So a couple days later or a week later, I was walking home with my friend Jim, and their garbage was out. And there was a television. It was a small black and white television. I grabbed it. I brought it home, you know, kind of snuck it in. I remember plugging it in. And I remember playing Atari on a black and white television in my bedroom and just thinking, oh my gosh, I have a TV in my room. And it's because I just figured it out. I just figured, you know, there's a need. And there's no way no one's going to buy me a television for my bedroom. But I figured it out. I also remember I had this. It was kind of like a Walkman, but it had one speaker on it. It was red, and you could plug in your headphones or you could listen to the speaker on it. I wanted to listen to my Elvis tapes because I loved Elvis, and we had no batteries, but I was determined I was going to listen to Elvis. So what I decided was, not knowing anything, power is power. So what I did was I cut the cord off of an old lamp, and I pulled the wires back. And I wrapped around the terminals that the batteries go to on your tape player. And I was like, all right, here it goes, you know. And I plugged it into the wall, started to smoke, and I pulled. And the two wires pulled back, and a big spark went, and fuse blew for part of the house. And I remember everyone trying to figure out what just happened, and I didn't say anything. I love this fixing stuff, but I need to learn a little bit more. I don't know if you remember, I used to have this thing, and I would spend hours working on it. It had wires and a book. It was like, I think it was from Radio Shack. And if you read the book, it would tell you which component, a diode or a capacitor or a speaker, to put one wire from one spot to the next. And then it would connect all the circuits and you could make a radio, a bird caller, an alarm, you know, all these things. And I loved that thing. I loved that I could connect all these different things. And I think that's kind of where it started. There was plenty of projects. People would give me bike parts and I would build a bike. And I remember riding these ugly bikes around and being so happy because I had a bike. Who cares? Right. You know, I made it myself and I had a bike. So I think fixing stuff kind of came about from a necessity. And then I really enjoyed it. And, you know, and when Beth and I got together, there are certain things like kitchen table and everything. And you're like, well, we can do that together. Then it becomes a project for us to do together, something that turns out great and we have in our home that we're proud of, you know?
I wanna just jump forward and share with the audience the most recent interception at the dump.
Oh, yeah.
Took a picture. I want you to tell that story because, man, that rocked my world.
Okay, well, we got a new set of couches for the house.
And congratulations, by the way. That's a big deal.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We love them. And delivery costs money. And heck, I have a pickup truck, so we'll just carry them in ourselves because that's just how you save money. But then you have to get rid of your old couch. So you got to go to the dump. It's actually not the dump. It's a station where they crush everything and take it to the dump. But it's kind of weird because it's like this big pit with this big metal crusher. I get up there and there's a lady, she throws a big thing of records in.
And did that break your heart?
Yeah, and they're getting, it's like, I see her throw them and I see them go in the air and I see them get crushed. And I'm just like—
life goes into slow motion.
Yeah, I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. I have no idea if they were, you know, crap records or if they were something great. But 2 seconds earlier, I gotta flip through them, you know? Well then, she's throwing something else out, and the lady that runs the crushing machine stops her and says, whoa, whoa, she's got this Atari in a plastic case, and there's a nice plastic top on the top of it. Well, when the lady does this, the top only goes flying into the crusher, and it gets crushed. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. And I look, and the lady that's running the crusher, she's like, don't throw that in there. I'll take this. And I told the lady, I said, I'm glad you grabbed that, because if you didn't, I was gonna. And she's like, oh, gosh, yeah. So she takes it and takes it to the side, and I start loading our couches into this crusher, which, by the way, it was real easy to throw our couches in, but when you see them in there all crooked and everything, it's like sad. You kind of see your kids sitting on them for the past 10 years and everything. It's like I actually took a picture of them in the crusher. Until that point, I was like, get rid of these old things, but it was kind of sad.
That's interesting. So all of a sudden you're like, wow, I just threw out sort of a family member.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. You know? And I'm like, good riddance. But so the lady on the side and everything, she comes back up and she's like, what am I going to do with an Atari? You know, she's like, I don't know. You know, she's like, if you want it, you can have it. And I'm like, I do, you know, I took it because one, I love the Atari. I still have our family one that we all grew up with.
The Atari 2600, by the way.
Yeah, Atari 2600 is the one that we had, and it didn't work. And about 2 years ago, I pulled it apart and cleaned everything up and got it to work again. And we had played it and, you know, really enjoyed it. Well, this Atari had different games. And the cool thing about it was it wasn't Atari 2600. It was the Sears version. And it looks just the same, but it has like extra buttons and knobs and stuff. So I got that and brought it home. I'm like, all right, well, we're going to hook this thing up. So I had to repair the cord, plugged it in, and it worked. And I was so happy because it had the original controllers and the original paddle. And ours, the paddles were broken. And I couldn't find any on Amazon or anything like that. So I was excited to pull all our old games out. And all the ones that had the paddle, I stayed up all night, and Savannah and I played some. And it's kind of amazing to play it on this huge color TV. Remember that I used to play it on this black and white television. And it's just, it's one of those things that's really cool. So
that's interesting to think about, like that the advancement of technology in terms of television sets even would change the experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had to get different components to even hook it up to the new TV.
Well, and what's surreal about it is that you took this game console that we grew up with, that the graphics were best through the Activision games. Like those were a little more advanced than the Atari games themselves, which were highly pixelated. And you took a picture on technology that didn't exist back then on a phone, and you took a picture of the screen of you playing it, and then you sent it to me. And I was just thinking, my God, this phone that he's sharing the game with me on didn't even exist. It wasn't even on the...
But yeah, and here's something to think about too. The games you play on your phone that are free now have probably more technology in them, but they're free. And each one of those games was like, I think Jason a while back told the story.
They were like $30.
Yeah, you'd like paid like $50 for Miss Pac-Man or something, you know?
Yeah, Grandma started checking accounts for us, and Jason and I used to take our allowance, and we were supposed to put it in the bank, but we would take it, we would save it, and then we would walk up to Jewel Osco, and they had in the Osco section, the way that they have cigarettes behind the counter, they had Atari games behind the counter. And we used to go up there, and we used to like, we finally saved up enough for like Haunted House.
I mean, yep.
And it was a huge purchase. Like it was a big deal. And I remember asking if we could take money out of our bank accounts to get a game, to get a new game. And Dad would say, it's your money, but just remember that once it's gone, it's gone.
Right.
You're not getting it back. Like it doesn't regenerate, you know?
Right. Well, that's one of the things I think I like about the older stuff is one, it's fun to fix, but two, it kind of feels cool to keep something around that would otherwise be gone. I mean, you can't do it with everything, but you know, keeping the Atari, or we got this record console and I had to do things on it, solder things and fix things on this tube radio that I had never done. And it was a learning experience for me, but it was also, I had Savannah in there learning how to solder, and you know, it was intriguing. And she sees this old thing out, gives it a shot, you know, so it was a good project. And it's nice to say, you know, I made this thing that everyone else walked past, you know, work again. And it's cool to modernize a lot of stuff, but sometimes it's cool to keep some of it original and make some of it fit your needs, you know?
Cool. What kind of advice would you give to dads single dads, young dads, married dads. What are some of the struggles that you endured as a man, and how did you sort of reevaluate and move through them?
Well, I would just say overall, one, you got to try to relax a little bit. It's hard to do.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because nothing comes just one at a time. You don't get one ball thrown at you. They throw 30 at once, and you're supposed to catch them all. Okay. Well, just relax, get hit, and then pick them off the ground one by one. Eventually, you know, you'll get them all picked up. You know, you're going to get some bruises along the way. What can you do? It's like you're going from the transition of a kid to an adult and a parent. There's going to be things that you see right away that you got to change, and there's going to be some things that you don't see for forever, mistakes that you're going to continue to make. And you know what? As long as you're moving forward, there's a Tim McGraw song, Better Than I Used to Be. And it's like one of my favorite songs. Kind of tells you that I'm not as good as I'm going to be, but you know, I'm better than I used to be. Ever since I heard that song, that's kind of been like my theme song playing in my head. You still make mistakes. You still make wrong judgments. But you know what? If you dwell on all those, then you won't see all these things that you've gotten better at, you know?
What inspires you?
Lots. One of the things that is so weird, and I don't know, maybe it's, you kind of like this in a way too. You know how some people you can just focus on one thing and just do one thing at a time? But I love so many different things. So many things inspire me that it's like sometimes it's a squirrel. It's like you're all over the place, and focusing in is sometimes the hard part. I mean, I get music, a song, conversation, family member, all these different things, a need. You know, sometimes that's inspiring. Somebody else's need or our need or seeing somebody else excited about something. It's like music too. It comes down to a feeling at that time, what you feel. I guess it's all feeling based because every song has its place. And
so you just made me think of a question that I didn't plan to ask, but I'm going to ask it and see what happens. Another thing that I admire about you is you're such a dude in terms of the way that the world says dudes ought to be. Like, you're such a dude, and also you're okay being a sensitive guy. You feel stuff and you are willing to. Has it been hard to sort of have that range?
No. I mean, I never really thought about it. I don't really know. It's just kind of me.
Okay. One other question. What sustains you?
I guess I would say family and music and projects. You know, like before this, I had a men's Bible study. And that's something, not just a men's Bible study, but God going to church. You got to fit that in to everything. And you got to learn. So I would say family, music, faith, those are probably the three there.
So this might sound goofy, but and, you know, wobble around in it for a second if you have to, but I think it's a really important piece of it. And I'm glad that you mentioned the Bible study and the men's group, because I'm a huge believer of community being necessary for us to grow and for us to heal and for us to shift and for us to sort of accept ourselves, right? And learn who we are as others see us and also as we would like to be. You know, like we can't do that kind of growth if we're not in relationship, right? So sometimes it's with our family, sometimes it's with our spouse, and sometimes it's with, you know, community outside of that. What is faith to you, or what is spirituality to you? Do you have a spiritual practice? If you were to put it into words, are you able to?
I guess that's kind of a hard subject to put into words. So, I mean, it's church, it's faith. So you have the Bible, and I've tried to read it before, and I'll be honest, I can't do it, but I love the stories and I love the messages and everything, but they have to be broken down, and they have to be broken down in a manner that I guess relates to me. That's another thing with Beth. Beth knows the Bible more than I do. And if I have a question or whatever, typically she can point me where to look in it. It's really cool. But this Bible study, another thing that's pretty awesome is this is a Bible study from where we used to live. I knew I missed the guys in it and everything, but with COVID and everything happening, they are all staying home and they're doing the Zoom. And they sent me a message and, you know, said, we're doing this Saturday, you know, if you want to join. It's just weird how that came together. And it's like I never left, you know. And it's funny because I'm kind of like the kid in this. Everyone else is retired, you know, and I'm obviously not. I'm kind of back home and I'm learning everything. But if you look at it, that's faith and that's God doing work, you know, in your life. I can't say that every day, and I should, I can't say every day that I point something that, you know, God did this for me or whatever, but there are things like that definitely he had a hand in, and this is unbelievable, and I'm thankful that I can see that.
Well, and one of the things that I observe too with you is I think you live a life very faithfully. I think that it's just inherent in the way that you live your life. I think it's inherent in the creativity. I think it's inherent in the finding possibility where others might not see some. You know, that's faith. To me, I think the, you know, taking your daughter around the square with a $1.35, that's demonstrating faith. I really believe that you are one of those people who display that in the way that you live. You know, risks that you've taken, you know, risks about, like we didn't talk about, but shifting jobs to become a truck driver and then that not working out. But what it did do is moved you forward, and you were willing to take the risk because where you were wasn't working. So you had the faith to try something crazy and different. You did that. You saw it through. It didn't play out the way that you thought it would, which is always disappointing and frustrating, particularly when you've invested yourself, but you continued to look forward, right? You said, okay, well, that didn't work. Now what? And I think sometimes the okay, now what is one of the greatest prayers. I think the okay, now what is sort of this invitation to spirit or to the universe or to God or to whatever it is, even if we're not conscious of it. I think that's one of our biggest connections to trusting, that I have only so much control over what happens to me. And I trust that there is this greater purpose that is unfurling that I'm not aware of, and I'm willing to keep stepping into it. Even without the dogma or the religion or the jargon or anything like that, I've always seen us as that. You know, it's one of the things that I really admire about you.
Well, thank you. That's kind of cool. Step back again to, we were talking in our Bible study today. So if you were to write, you know, your eulogy, what would you say? You know, and I was kind of thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know. Dave, basically our moderator, and heads it and everything. He said, well, you're writing it in your actions. Well, that's good. Some decent things will be said, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I might have to make up decent things. You know, if they want me to talk for any amount of time, I'll have to start, you know, just manufacturing things. But
right. You were the one I was worried about. I wasn't so worried about my family here, but no, you. So if you can stick to that, then we're good.
Right on. Well, do you have anything else that you'd like to say that you think would be useful to men or to families or to the human race that you've learned, or anything that you'd like to say to me?
This has been awesome. Thank you for this. We'll see what it sounds like when it's edited. I love you. And I don't really have any words of wisdom, just be nice.
Be nice. That's profound, brother. You seriously. All right, John. I appreciate you.
This has been another episode of Just Say It. I'm your host, Jen Slumak, and I want to thank you for coming by and encourage you to see my website at soulnotskin.com, as well as to check out the show notes for this episode to learn more about my guest and what they are up to today. Thank you for stopping by. See you next week.